You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hypothetical.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from large lexicons to layered labyrinths. And today, we're covering the Lamia. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How you doing today?
Yes. You're the big guy.
It is, you're the big guy.
And I'm feeling big.
Yeah?
I don't care how hot it is.
It is very hot.
It's sweltering.
It is extremely hot.
We're in SoCal.
Not talking about a big guy today.
No?
No.
What's a Lamia?
I mean, the Lamias are not small by any means, but I wouldn't consider them a big guy.
Oh, I think our next episode is giant. Really? I'm all fucking mixed up.
But you know what? It's a year of giants, and we should give them honor no matter the episode.
Yeah, go check out our giants episodes.
Indeed.
Or if you want to go back in time 1 year, you can check out our dragons episodes.
This is true. So, Lamias. Powerful, hedonistic, intelligent, and wicked. Lamias are yet another monstrosity taken from Greek mythology and transformed into something completely different for D&D. I find the Lamia to be an interesting monster, as it can fit into a number of various archetypes in your D&D campaign. From tempting seductress to tyrannical cult leader, from mystical magic user to fierce physical combatant, from a campaign big bad to just a random encounter. And even at really high levels, I think they can make sufficient mobs. So I think they're a very versatile creature.
Okay. Is it landing in that CR, you know,
a little bit higher? It's not the perfect CR.
Okay.
It's a little off perfect. I think it's CR4. I'm not sure. Maybe 5. Where was I? Known to dwell in remote ancient ruins and tombs long forgotten, these half-human, half-lions live lives of decadent tyranny in their private domains. Though they surround themselves with beautiful things and are themselves said to be beautiful, their hearts are filled with ugliness as they seek to dominate, subjugate, and cause suffering to all those that they come in contact with. And as I said before, the D&D Lamia is based off of the Greek mythological creature of the same name.
Okay, so it's a half-human, half-lion, you said?
Mostly, yes.
Okay.
For the most part.
So like a sphinx, sort of?
Kind
of.
Well, the sphinx has the body of a lion, yeah. And the face, a humanoid-ish face.
Yeah.
And sometimes wings. Sometimes not wings, but a lot of times wings. This is like centaur, lion. Lion centaur.
Okay, so a lion body, like a horse body would
yeah,
be for the centaur?
But where the neck and head would be is human torso that goes up to human body.
Okay, cool. So like this is the this is the centaur of the Pride Lands.
Exactly. Okay. There we go.
Sure.
Do you know anything about Lamia from Greek mythology?
You know, not really. Maybe if you started talking about which stories involve it, I might kind of remember. Because, okay. Obviously you study the Odyssey in high school or whatever in America.
Lamia is in the Odyssey, but that
and
is
then,
a good story.
And then I've read Hercules.
I don't think Lamia is in Hercules either. But,
yeah, then maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not.
Achilles, I've done some of that.
I don't think Lamia is in it.
Yeah, then maybe they've just like missed this one. Because I know what a harpy is, but I never really read too much about harpies.
Right.
I mean, they show up here and there. But
yeah, yeah. I think you might be familiar with the creature, but not the creature that D&D depicts.
Okay. Well,
there's a big difference.
I really don't know either of them, really.
So Lamia in ancient Greek mythology was not the name of a type of monster, but actually the name of a singular woman who became a child-eating monster after her own children were destroyed by Hera.
Oh, man. Baby killing's back in a big way.
It's true. We got to make up for all that not baby killing.
We got to make up for all the time we didn't talk about babies dying in D&D. That killed babies. So that was like, more like year zero.
Like so many stories from Greek mythology, it all comes down to Zeus being a womanizer and Hera being vengeful as fuck.
Welcome to the GrecoCast, everybody. Put your, what was it called? Like, just Zeus is involved. So get Zeus ready for the involved. Stuff that you talk about when you talk about Greeks and
it's,
Zeus.
Yes, it's true. So,
warning.
So, where was I? Womanizer, Hera is vengeful as fuck. Lamia, who was a beautiful queen, attracted Zeus's attention, as happens. And Hera, who learned of her husband Zeus's tryst with her, took ultimate vengeance upon this poor woman. Every time Lamia would have a child, Hera would kill the baby.
Damn.
Some sources say Hera made Lamia kill her own children. There's a lot of conflicting, like, stories when it comes to Lamia.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Remember, you know,
you have different poets kind of covering
across different centuries. Yeah, exactly.
He's like, in my version of the Marvel Universe, the Lamia will have.
That's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what it's like. So Hera also afflicted Lamia with sleeplessness, so she would anguish constantly.
Yeah, okay.
She would never have a moment of not anguishing.
Yep, sleeplessness is wild. Yeah. It does wild things to your brain.
Zeus, in a bizarre counter move to the sleeplessness thing, gave Lamia the ability to remove her own eyes. I guess the idea was that the sleeplessness was connected to sight, but I'm not sure what that's about.
Sure.
You can take out your eyes, though.
This fucking Naruto up in here.
Yeah, so
just pop him out like a fucking light bulb.
He also may or may not have included a shape-shifting ability with the eye removal package.
Oh, okay, like, sure.
You can now change your shape. Uh-huh. So, weighed down by misfortune and envying the happiness of all the other women in the world with children, Lamia began snatching newborn babies from their mother's arms. Then she brought them to a cave, and there people say she ate them head to toe.
Okay.
Go
ahead.
The savagery of Lamia's heart was so great that in time her face turned into a nightmarish mask and she started resembling beasts much more than she resembled any human. The baby snatching so obsessed Lamia, she swore to bereave all mothers of their children, just as she had once been done so by Hera. Some stories say this is where Zeus did the removable eye thing, actually, making Lamia need to keep them in a jar by day so that she would be blind and it would cut her baby killing time essentially in half because she only could do it.
Because if you can't see babies, you can't kill babies. It's logic.
It is. It's just logic.
Just straight up.
So, much like D&D, these stories are not really cohesive and have transformed dramatically over time.
Sure. Is it like she become like cat, part lion because her human stomach can't handle all the baby eating?
No, the lion thing never happens in Greek mythology. Where D&D came up with that. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But over the centuries, Lamia and her story were used as boogie women to frighten and discipline children.
Okay.
In later traditions and storytelling, the Lamia became a type of phantom synonymous with a creature called the Impusai, which seduced youths to satisfy their sexual appetite and fed on the flesh of them afterwards.
Okay, that's a little different.
These things transform over time. The Lamia has been ascribed serpentine qualities. These include half woman, half snake beasts, which is how I have traditionally seen Lamias depicted in all other sources outside of D&D.
Okay.
So when I think of a Lamia, I usually think of like a half snake, half woman.
Like a Medusa, almost?
Kind of like just snake, like a UNT.
Basically. Oh, yeah, okay. Well, the kind of UNT that has snake from the waist down.
But also one that, like, that's also, like, part succubus, like, has, like, tempting and illusory powers and stuff like that.
Okay.
Which D&D does kind of have that a little bit, but we'll get into it later. Where was I? Diodorus Siculus, a Greek historian from the first century, gave a demythologized account of Lamia as a queen of Libya who ordered her soldiers to snatch children away from their mothers and kill them, and his beauty gave way to a bestial appearance due to her savageness, which is quite frankly, honestly, the same story with a country's name attached to it and the gods part taken out. So,
yeah.
Whatever. Moving on. Enough about Greek mythology. Let's get into some D&D.
Here's the Christopher Nolan cut.
Yeah, here's the Christopher Nolan cut. That's exactly right. That's too much. Anyways, the D&D Lamia is essentially a cross between a stunningly attractive human and a sleek, powerful lion. Its beautiful humanoid upper body merges at the waist into a powerful four-legged leonine form, a lion centaur, if you will. Their hybrid configuration makes them both very fast and powerful, and their vicious black claws speak to their predatory nature. A typical Lamia stands over 6 feet tall, measures 8 feet long, and weighs about 650 pounds.
Shoot.
Yeah.
That's big.
Indeed. While most Lamias appear to be of the lionesque variety, there are other types of Lamia with the lower bodies of goats, deer, and other beasts. A particularly powerful type of Lamia, known as the Lamia Noble, has the lower body part of a serpent, which often can lead to them being confused with Naga, Yuan-Ti abominations, or Medusas.
Okay. So you have to roll really, really good to like differentiate.
I guess.
Otherwise,
so.
You just think it's UNT, and then at that point, why not?
Yeah, why not? Why isn't exactly. it this one? The most powerful of Lamia kind can even change their lower bodies as easily as a mortal being changes their clothes.
Okay, so there's the shapeshifter bit mm-hmm. kind of weave back in.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm saying like, so if you're not a centaur, you're a Lamia. This is what I'm getting.
Sure.
If you're not, what are they, neutral? They're like, centaurs were like...
More, centaurs are neutral.
Yeah, so you're either neutral centaur or you're evil and you have the lower body of another animal.
Right.
What if this thing shape changed itself to look like a centaur?
I mean, it could.
Okay, so you could just be centaur or you could be... like. Okay, never mind. Yeah, okay. Let's just keep going.
Gotcha.
I'm confusing myself.
So speaking of clothes, Lamia tend to either wear the most luxurious of regalia or nothing at all. They often nice. Smell as sweet perfumes of frankincense, and they're also biologically immortal.
Okay.
So any questions so far? We're about to get into the way these creatures live their lives.
Do you think like a push-up exercise for a centaur or Lamia-like creature is like... Obviously, it's going to do a lot more, but what are they doing with that lower half when it's like up there? Is that like an ab workout too? Yeah, it's going
to be
difficult,
right? Like, how do you work out your chest? It has to be through like resistance training. You couldn't do a regular push-up.
It's like a push-up and a squat and a crunch at the same time.
I don't think they could get down there like that.
No, that's the thing is they would have to like do a super like they would have to do a handstand with their lower body so that their upper body just kind of goes with it, you know.
What if they like, okay.
So they're four-legged,
they can put their back legs up on a wall.
Yeah. Okay. Walk up so it backwards.
Yeah. There we go.
And then exercise the walk forward.
Never mind. They're working their chests out like crazy.
That's what I'm saying is you're going to have like super upper body buffness. The traps are going to be intense. The delts are going to be there.
Out of control.
Yeah. The pecs are going to be popping.
Yes. They're very physically fit. Moving on. So. Lamias are evil and cruel creatures that take pleasure in causing suffering. They are legendary monsters that prey upon travelers or guard hidden places or objects of power. Lamias are mysterious entities that seem devoted to the spreading of chaos and evil within their dwelling places. They are particularly fond of seeking out adventurers of pure hearts to seduce and corrupt to evil, savoring the destruction of their virtue. They sustain themselves by eating human flesh, using a variety of abilities including seduction, disguise, ventriloquism, illusions, mirages.
We can put on a fucking puppet show. Like, come here, little boy. tell you the story of the king.
Mirror images and other such things to lure and entice and confuse those who wander into their midst into dangerous situations.
So they have magic. If you see a fucking like a shadow puppet stage set up on the side of the road,
must be a Lamia.
Don't do it. Don't go over there. You're gonna get eaten.
Once they've secured their victim, they carve a feast out of them with curved daggers and lion claws.
Cool.
It all ends in blood.
So they could just punch you to death because they're probably super buff from there.
They could, but they like stabbings.
So. I want to pitch this. This is a deep cut, but like D20X Lamia edition, and it's like P90X. You know, they're doing like the really intense workouts.
I hate it.
Okay.
Lamias typically live in ancient desert ruins. These decadent monsters take what has been forgotten and make it the seat of their hedonistic rule, surrounding themselves with sycophants. Lamias rely on jackal wares to perform various tasks, sending them across the wastes to capture slaves and steal treasures from caravans, encampments, or villages concealed by the Lamias' magic as they attack. Lamias adorn their crumbling havens with finery stolen from passing caravans, then use magic to further accentuate their lairs, masking decay with illusions and lies. Lair's breathtaking gardens, finely decorated apartments, and numerous slaves seem at odds with its remoteness and its state of ruin. Using its intoxicating touch, Lamia weakens the minds of its enemies, making them more susceptible to its enchantment spells and turning them into its slaves. Mm. Those it beguiles with the geese spell are pitted against each other in elaborate contest for the Lamia's amusement. And we're going to go over the geese spell today.
That is G-E-A-S. We had a debate about pronouncing it earlier, but we're not sure. Geese.
It's a really cool spell. And it's very much tied to the Lamia. So I figured we'd go over the spell today, probably when we do the stat block.
Yeah. I like the loop background to the Jackalware here.
Jackalware
have a master to answer to. And I think if I remember correctly, for most of the lore, mm-hmm. they usually are. I know we talked about Jackal Lord being like,
that's a separate,
but it was kind of, it was kind of different. Yeah. So that's like, okay, so if jackals are nearby, maybe Lamia nearby.
Maybe. Yeah. So, always anxious to gain more wealth and slaves, a Lamia uses a pool of water or a mirror in conjunction with a scrying spell to view its domain.
Dang.
A Lamia uses this power to watch over trade routes and nearby settlements, or to seek out objects and creatures it fancies. They use their magic to lure potential victims to their lairs, relying on illusion and their thralls to capture hapless foes. Lamia's prized beauty and strength above all else, however. Any prisoner that falls short of their esteem becomes the main course in a horrible feast. So be beautiful or get eaten, basically.
Yeah.
Or is set free to die while wandering the wastes. As long as they have slaves to face their enemies, Lamias fight from the fringes, beguiling foes with magic if they can. A Lamia, pressed into melee, never stays there for long, shredding flesh with claw and dagger before springing away to safety.
So you're going to have, you're going to get attacked by like a random assortment of whatever this Lamia was able to get its hands on, pretty much.
Right.
And or jackal wares.
Yeah. I mean, this is like a classic dungeon boss.
Yeah.
Like that's this been, is like, a boss that rules a dungeon with minions.
Right. It's been you the whole time, like sending your minions out of the dungeon into the trade route. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I get you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is cool. I mean, I'm ready for stat. Well, you said it was high, a little higher than CR3, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay. The early level. So after you beat the Jackalware and you make it out of town, finally, and then you were attacked by a rando cast of X and Y, beat them, and then you go into the dungeon and you deal with the traps and
exactly other, like maybe the end of slaves. A mini campaign or of a campaign arc or something like that.
You have to fight the Lamia's like little brother.
Sure, yeah, let's take a short rest.
Okay.
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
Hey everybody, be sure to check out
Super Quest Saga,
a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me. Set in space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
So we've returned.
We've returned.
Back. Let's talk about Lamia Society a little bit.
Anything but lame.
Lamia Society, when living in groups, is matriarchal. They believe males are good for nothing more than breeding and slave labor, and due to their highly indulgent and decadent nature, are said to be highly sexual creatures that mate often with captured males to produce offspring.
That sounds like some drow shit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Maybe not the
maybe the not the excessive mating, excessive but yeah.
sexualness.
No, but other ways, yes.
Yeah, there's some they're doing magic and stuff to make you sex them.
Sure.
You said they're like succubus.
They are. Right? Yeah, they are. Well, we're talking about like male lamia, female lamia.
Oh, so mostly consensual, sort of.
Kind of, I guess. There's a power dynamic. I'm not sure. Let's move on.
All right.
Often these lamia groups are ruled by one or more lamia nobles. These beings differ from the normal lamias in that the lamia nobles' lower bodies are those of gigantic serpents, and their upper bodies can be either male or female. All lamia nobles are able to assume human form. In this guise, they attempt to penetrate human society and wreak evil. Lamia nobles are given to outbursts of senseless violence. So
they have to transform their lower body into the human form, so it just looks like a dude standing, and then like the back end is like butt extends out and has legs back here. And they have to like retract all that back into the butt.
Maybe, sure. Before 5e, very little was ever written about the origins of lamias. But okay. The 5e Monster Manual claims that they originate from the Dark Prince Grozd.
Oh, hey. What's up?
Hey, Grozd. How you been?
It's been wild.
We talked about lamias being one of the many non-demons that serve this demon lord, along with tieflings, harpies, and mortal witches. It is said that the demon lord Grozd creates lamias from his mortal servants, granting them immortality in return for monstrous power and an oath of fealty.
Okay.
So Grozd sometimes tasks lamias with guarding locations that are important to him, but lamias in his service remain free to spread their evil as they see fit.
Okay.
So he's just like, go.
Well, that's chaos, right? Like, go do your shit.
Exactly.
I'm going to just plop you down right here.
Yeah.
So this is one of the experiments that Grozd is getting up to. And by the way, it's been a while since we talked about Grozd. I think I mean like last week.
Sure. Yeah.
Am I getting that accurately? Like he's creating these and unleashing them as like one of his demon experiments.
So kind of, yeah, but also like to be able to call upon when he needs.
Right. So this is not necessarily a demon, but it's
born demon.
Born it's of demonkind.
Grozd creates them, but yeah, they're not demons.
Okay. Strange.
Yeah. We're about to get stranger. So finally, 4E, of course, did lamias quite differently.
Yay, 4E.
So differently, in fact. I'm not sure why they decided to slap the name lamia on the creature at all.
Oh.
Here we go.
It's like that, huh?
But in 4th edition, a lamia is a bizarre fey being that assumes a beautiful humanoid form to lure wayfarers to their death. It is in its true form, this lamia is a swarm of hundreds of black scarab beetles assembled into a coherent mass around the flesh-stripped bones of a powerful fey creature.
I just want to do that scene from The Mummy.
Yeah, exactly. This swarm shares a single intelligence and,
what the fuck?
Again, can magically mask itself in the guise of an attractive humanoid. It sometimes appears to be a human, elf, eladrin, or drow, partly comprised of scores of beetles, so it can do a little hybrid thing.
All right.
Or it's like face of elf, arm of beetles. So, I mean, why that's useful, but they can do it.
It doesn't sound useful.
No. So, some lamias are simply driven by the need to consume other sentient creatures. We're still talking about 4E ones here. And stalk humanoids wherever they find them. Others possess a twisted thirst for knowledge, seeking to acquire arcane lore and magical power at any cost. And the devouring of a humanoid grants them some of said humanoid's knowledge and memories.
Okay.
When a lamia slays a humanoid creature, it adds another beetle to its ever-growing swarm. When a lamia swarm grows too large, it reproduces by first slaying a worthy fey creature, such as a powerful eladrin. Rather than consuming the body, the lamia divides itself, filling the corpse with hundreds of its beetles. Over time, these beetles devour the corpse and arises a new lamia. This newborn lamia gains much of the victim's memories and knowledge in the process.
That's weird.
Very drastically different.
This is not, yeah.
It's a cool creature. I just don't know why we're calling it a lamia.
I mean, there's some similarities.
Like, are there?
Well, I mean, it's like seducing people, right?
There's that, yeah. That's where
it was one of the first things you said. So maybe I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's not that different.
That's the one thing, you're right.
And but, like, oh, it's seducing people and then it's turning into 1,000 people.
It can kind of shapeshift a little.
It's fucking scarab flesh eaters from The Mummy.
Yeah.
One crawls up your fucking shoe and it's over.
Yeah, exactly. Cool monster. Again, don't know why it's called lamia, but 4th edition liked to do things different. And sure I figured we should talk about it.
Yeah.
But do you have any more questions about the lamia before we jump into the stat block?
Man, 4E is so fucking weird. No, I'm ready for this.
All right, stat block. I haven't really looked at this, so I'm excited to hear what you got to say.
Now, Will, you said this creature was immortal. So what does it mean when it has 97 hit points and you take it down to zero?
I said biologically immortal.
So, but what does that mean?
That means it doesn't age and die.
Oh, okay. So like you can kill it though with weapons.
Yeah.
All right. Sweet. Mm-hmm. That's good news. I was like, damn, this is fucking, maybe I shouldn't be sending my low-level party in here. Lamia, large monstrosity, chaotic evil. We're talking about stat block now. Armor class is 13 natural armor. I see that's pretty average, right? Yeah. So hit points are 97. That's pretty good. And speed, movement speed's 30 feet. Shouldn't that change based off of the bottom half?
Look, man, I don't know.
Fucking horse speed.
Maybe, like maybe it's got a feature. I don't know.
I think we'll see. Goat can move 40 feet.
Well, I mean, technically, humanoids can too. It's just you have to dash to move more than
well,
that.
Well, the goat—that means if you're going to do that, then the goat moves 80. You know what I mean?
I mean, how fast do goats run?
40 feet in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yo, do they? Oh, you're
yeah. No, I literally mean like, yeah, I got a player riding.
I don't know.
Goat.
Lamias are kind of bigger and heavier. Maybe it's more. It's harder for them. Maybe their dash is just.
This
I don't
is
know.
Just a balancing thing. Mm-hmm. So we have 16 strength. Should I read the? The yeah. ability that yeah. also okay yeah. so plus well the plus three also
no just the big 16,
okay so 16 the big one 16 strength 13 dex 15 con 14 intelligence 15 wisdom and 16 charisma. This thing's buff.
Yeah, it's pretty buff, pretty well-rounded buff.
Skills are a plus 7 to deception, a plus 4 for insight, and a plus 3 for stealth. Those are all very powerful for a monster
and also very fitting for Alemia.
Dark vision 60 feet,
of course.
Passive perception is 12. Languages are abyssal and common. That makes sense since they need to talk to Grots. Challenge rating 4. Nice.
I tried to do it under the table.
Yeah.
It did not help at all.
Nope.
I won't do that again.
Honestly, I don't think it matters.
Okay.
Just crack that bad boy. Innate spell casting. So the Lamia. Fuck, I keep saying Lamia. Lamia's innate spell casting ability is Charisma. The spell save DC is 13, and it can innately cast the following spells requiring no material components. At will, it can disguise self in any humanoid form. It can use major image 3 times a day. It can also use... Oh, no, that's also at will. Sorry. Disguise self and major image are at will. 3 times a day, it can use char in person, mirror image, scrying, suggestion.
Nice.
All very good spells. And then once a day, it can use the Gius spell. Which we'll talk about right after we finish the stat block.
Okay.
Right? Or should I jump in now?
Ah, fuck it. Jump in now.
Okay. Like,
and then we'll jump back to abilities. We'll
jump back to the actions, yeah.
So tell me about the Gies spell. Or Gies.
Gies. Oh, I can't. I don't know.
Gies.
I see the A and I want to say the A. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not an expert. We're obviously not experts in how to pronounce stuff on this show.
I think it's Gies.
Gies. Fifth level enchantment. So the casting time is 1 minute. So it's going to take a minute to do. So, and the range is 60 feet. Mm-hmm. Let's see. This lasts 30 days.
Yeah, it's powerful.
So it's classified for bards, clerics, druids, paladins, and wizards. But you place a magical command on a creature that you can see within range, forcing it to carry out some service or refrain from some action or course of activity as you decide. If the creature can understand you, it must succeed on a wisdom saving throw or become charmed by you for the duration. While the creature is charmed by you, it takes 5d10 psychic damage each time it acts in a manner directly counter to your instructions, but no more than once each day. So it can take that 5d10 psychic damage one time, which will put down a lot of people, probably, especially if you've got like a level 3 character. You're probably going to go down from that. A creature that can understand you is unaffected by this. A creature that can't understand you is unaffected by the spell. You can issue any command you choose, short of an activity that would result in certain death. Should you issue a suicidal command, the spell ends. You can end the spell early by using an action to dismiss it, and a remove curse, greater restoration, or wish spell also ends it. I mean, someone would have to preempt. It sounds like somebody would have to come in like, you got a geese on you, bro. You can't like ask to be.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Geese on you, bro.
This isn't relevant to the Lamia, but at higher levels, when you cast a spell using 7th or 8th, the duration is 1 year. That's high level bard stuff,
it's
right?
Like, it's like, this is like a high level curse.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And pure command, and this is what how they will pit slaves against each other in combat with their spells, because it's not certain death. One of you is going to die, but the other's probably going
to
live.
You just have to talk up the confidence side of your slave. Yeah. Like, no, dude, you're
good. You got this.
You're my Beyblade. You're going to get in there and fucking rip it up.
So yeah, that's the Gies.
I should mention at 9th level, it lasts indefinitely until it's ended by one of the spells mentioned above.
Yeah. I do find it interesting that it's like you'll take 5d10 psychic damage, which is a hefty amount.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, you could just do whatever you want. That seems...
Without taking the damage,
like,
yeah.
As a reader of fantasy novels, that just doesn't make... You know what I mean? Like, it should just... like you should take the damage
every time.
Maybe not every time, but maybe every hour. You know what I mean? Like
that you're not doing what you're supposed to do.
You'll only have to take this damage once an hour.
Okay. I mean, that can get really hairy. But
I know it's a mechanical thing. I know it's done for mechanical purposes.
Well, let's kind of take a look at the balancing here in terms of like what creatures this Lamia should be interacting with.
You like know? 5d10 averages out about 25 damage.
Yeah. So this Geas spell is like in case one of your party members gets
geased.
Then they can take the 5d10, which would be certain unconsciousness for them, right? Like they, if you're a level 3 character.
If you're a level 3, that's not even certain then.
Well, no, but you're going to be left crippled for sure. What do you have, like 40 HP tops?
Take a short rest.
Yeah.
Use your hit die.
No short rest allowed.
Is that, yeah, does it say that? It doesn't say that.
Well, I mean, you could.
But that's my make point that the is command. Like, I understand the purpose of that. I think it should be more damage. I think okay. That's what it comes down to.
Sure.
It should it double that.
So 10 D10.
That way, acting against it is like real legitimate chance of dying or falling unconscious.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, I'll just take that damage penalty. I mean, obviously, like, this is, if someone's metagaming, they'll be like, I'll just take the damage penalty and then do whatever the fuck I want. And it's like, no. That undermines the point of the spell. The point of the spell is you can't just do whatever you want. You have to be clever about it.
Right. So I guess this all comes down to how the Lamia is going to use this spell, like what command you're going to give and like how you're going to make this character interact. I don't know. It seems it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the application of this spell at face value.
Here's one. The party gets captured, a party of three people in prison. Geese spells put on them. You're my slaves now. You do as I say.
Okay,
you're
so all three of them.
You're not to leave this facility, all this other stuff. So they all have the Geese spell. They have to figure out how to get out. But even if they're level three, they theoretically could probably all take the damage penalty by saying, we're escaping now. Bam, damage penalty.
Short rest real quick. One of them's a fucking cleric, yeah.
Or short rest. Use your hit die. And now you're full life and you don't have to worry about the geese spell for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So I mean, for me, it's...
Yeah. Maybe that's the point, is it's like not... It's supposed to severely weaken the party. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's a chance you roll all ones, right? But
yeah.
You could severely weaken the party and then they have to escape a dungeon. You know what I mean? Like,
but they were going to have to escape the dungeon anyways and it doesn't really weaken them all that much. I don't know. I just feel like there's something wrong with the spell and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm the one.
Well, because it's so easy to just overcome it. And it's like, I'll just eat the psychic damage. For a fifth
level spell, it should be a lot harder to overcome.
Yeah.
But that's just me. That's just my opinion, glancing and thinking about it. Maybe I'm not seeing something. I'm sure people in the comments can let us know. But let's move on. Let's finish the stat block because we have other episodes to record today.
I'm confused. Yeah. The actions are multi-attack. The Lamia makes two attacks, one with its claws and one with its dagger, or intoxicating touch, which is the last thing I'm going to read. Claws are one of these attacks, so that's a melee weapon plus 5 to hit, mm-hmm. Reach of 5 feet, one target, for 14 slashing damage, or 2d10 plus 3. And then there's a dagger, melee weapon attack plus 5 to hit, reach 5 feet, one target. Hit is 5 damage, or 1d4 plus 3 piercing damage, so significantly weaker attack. But the intoxicating touch, melee spell attack, plus 5 to hit, reach 5 feet, one creature. So if you hit, the target is magically cursed for 1 hour. Until the curse ends, the target has disadvantage on wisdom saving throws and all ability checks. So then you can geese them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it. Or like they have these other spells, like the charm person and, suggestion, like... Some of these.
Yeah, I mean, they have other spells, which is cool. That doesn't. I'm just talking about the geese spell in a bubble. I'm
trying to like figure out how to like combo them in.
Sure. I'm sure there's ways, but yeah, like I said, maybe I'm missing something. But any questions about the Lamia?
No.
All right. Well, I think we should get ready for a long rest.
So. I like that.
Let's get ready for this long rest.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the long rest portion of the show where we get ready to go to fucking sleep. Okay. And when I get ready to sleep, I put warm things on my feet.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How are your slippies this week?
They're like little quadrupedal little lions.
Oh, no. It seems uncomfortable.
Do
the legs walk for you?
That's so cool. Yes, they do.
And then the rest of you is that centaur part of the Lamia.
Yeah, there exactly. It's just if you draw a little face on the... see, this is the weird part.
Well, go ahead.
Because sort of the... Nope. There's okay. Hang on. They're just Lamia slippies because there's a. I put my foot in the butt part of the lion.
Yeah.
And then there's a little human at where my toes are, like popping up.
Oh, okay.
Because I was thinking, like, okay, so here's where I went. If I put it on and the legs are coming forward, like it would be walking, and I would have to move backwards, right?
Wait, why were you thinking about putting the slippy on from?
Like in the neck front. Portion. Yeah. Yeah. Why? And then because I could draw a little face on the back of my calf.
Oh, okay.
But that doesn't make any sense.
No, that doesn't.
No, yeah.
No, I was picturing it's essentially each slippy is its own individual leonine body.
Yeah, yeah, and exactly.
Then by putting them on, you have now become the Lamia because you have a lion lower half. By lower half, I mean feces. And then the rest of you is the centaur body coming up.
So here's what it is. Okay. It's the first slippy's got two legs on it, one in the front, one in the back, like toe heel.
Okay.
And the same one on the left foot.
Oh, there we go.
I slam them together.
Together. There we go. Yeah,
here we go. And now I just have weird knees.
Now let's go to sleep.
Okay. That fucking knocked me. I took a bunch of psychic damage trying to fucking figure that one out, and now I'm dead.
Okay,
I'm
unconscious. Absolutely. So let's talk about the contest we got going on, because this is the last episode before we announce the winner in just a few days. On September 15th, we're giving away the newest book in the newest D&D adventure module. What is it called? Rime of the Frostmaiden.
Will, you're 100% correct about everything you just said.
Cool.
This is the last episode. We are giving it away. We're not just giving away Rime of the Frostmaiden. We're giving away the ultimate art edition or whatever the fuck they call it.
Oh, yes.
The deluxe edition.
The ultimate art edition.
The ultimate book.
That sounds way better than the deluxe edition. But yeah, we're giving away the deluxe edition along with a Rime of the Frostmaiden
special dice set
and Rime of the Frostmaiden miniature set.
That's right.
So, the whole package deal.
Well, what do you have to do to enter if you are on the Dungeon Cast Twitter, where you can find Will.
On Twitter, all you have to do is tweet a link to an episode of any of our shows. It doesn't matter. With the hashtag DungeonCast, that'll enter you into the contest.
Include Super Quest Saga.
Yeah, Super Quest Saga, DD5, the YouTube version, the SoundCloud version, doesn't matter. If it's one of our shows and you're sharing it with hashtag DungeonCast, it'll enter you in the contest. That's on Twitter. If you do it on another social media platform, just send us a screenshot of proof, and that'll enter you as well.
Unless it's Instagram,
in which case Brian has some special instructions for you.
You can find me on Instagram at the DungeonCast, and you can enter as many times as you want in separate comments, as long as you tag a different friend. Tag your friends in the comments of the post I made about Rime of the Frostmaiden, and you can enter as many times as you fucking want, doggy. Get in there. That's it, dude. Make sure you like the post. Make sure you're following the account, and make sure you're not like tagging Nike or whatever, because that shit don't count. Nike don't give a fuck about us.
No. Quite frankly, I don't care about them.
Yeah, or don't. Somebody tagged an account at B like yesterday. They were like, it just at and then the letter B, and I was like, holy shit, and I had to go to that account because I'm like, who got the letter B, right?
Well, was it anything
No,
impressive?
It didn't exist. Oh, so if you, here's how it's going to work.
It's got to be real.
We're going to roll a random, we're going to get all these assignments up. We're going to get all these entries assigned to, you know, a random number. Table.
Yeah.
We're going to roll on the table.
That's how
we're
going
to go to that entry. Yeah. We're going to verify that you're doing all the right things and make sure that you entered correctly.
Otherwise, you don't win.
Otherwise, we just roll again.
Exactly.
We X you off. Sorry. But yeah, just follow the rules and it's all good. You can enter a gang of times, like 30 times. I've seen people enter like 15 times. Like, go for it, dude.
We also got some new merch in our merch shop on teespring.com. We have a What the Rump shirt.
Teespring.
Which hopefully is appearing right now as Ryan has spliced it into the video.
Oh, yeah. I'll just put it
in
up.
In case that doesn't happen, I was wearing it all episode.
Yes.
Hopefully the green didn't get caught up in the green screen. But
it might have.
It is what it is.
And if it did, the same shit's going to happen next episode.
Definitely my favorite design. It's a big green one-eyed orc who looks very angry with the words What the Grumsh right underneath it.
And he's got cool earrings and a top knot.
Yeah, exactly that. So if you want this cool-ass shirt or any of the other cool-ass shirts, go to teespring.com/the-dungeoncast.
Yeah. And then go check out episode 150 where we talk about Grumsh.
Yeah. Link is in the description. And I believe there's even a store if you're watching us on YouTube.
Yeah, that little right below the video. Teespring.com/the dungeon cast, or we have that little window down there. We're going to try to update and get some new merch.
Yeah, we're going to try and be more regular about it. But if you're interested in supporting us, that is one way you could do it. It really does help us a lot.
Yeah.
And it also helps us spread the word because people will be like, what is that cool shirt? And you can tell them it's the Dungeon Cast.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a new Dungeon Cast logo, or I think, I don't know, we're going to have to talk about that.
We're working on all kinds of art, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be super fucking cool.
There's a Year of the Giant shirt in there. There's a Year of the Dragon shirt in there. There's our classic logo. We have Super Quest Saga logos. We have Super Quest Saga characters.
That's right.
We have mugs. We have shirts. Go check it out.
Yeah, definitely. If you're looking for other ways to support us, aside from going to our merch shop or just talking about the Dungeon Cast, you can go to patreon.com/thedungeoncast, where you can support us at multiple levels of tiers and get a whole bunch of sweet bonus content, if that's what you're into. I think the most popular thing is probably getting these episodes early, as we record them in batches. So I usually finish them for audio side the same day we record, and we record three at a time these days. Mm-hmm. So you could potentially be 2 to 3 weeks ahead of all your listening. And you get that on your own special RSS feed. You get access to an exclusive channel in our Discord. Shout out to everybody in the Discord. Our game is going really good.
It is. It's been a lot of fun. I can't wait to finish it off.
Yeah, we're playing Vault Raiders, which is a one-shot game that we put on our Patreon with our Discord mods as a thank you, because they're fucking awesome. And it was so much fun, and I can't wait to finish it. So that will be available for listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they came up with some really, really good characters. I got a large amount of chuckling throughout most of the game.
Very much.
And it's very fun interacting with all you guys. As the NPC so far I have is Peba.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
A dwarf. Well, I think that's it for our game. Let's call it one.
Let's call it a game. We'll talk to you guys next week here on the Dungeon Cast.
Goodbye, everyone.
You know what I just realized? Grumsh is green.
Oh, Grumsh is green. He's a little different kind of green.
A little bit. Not as different as I wish he was.
You know what? Let's just do it.
It is what it is.
We can't change it. Let's remember not to commission anything green ever again.
Ever again.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Let's go.
Grumsh is green. Yep.
Oh, do I start this one?
I think so. Yeah, you do.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is a podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons from I did not remember this.
He's not prepped.
Large lexicon Slayer Labyrinth.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side path?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.